And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Here come the stories. They're starting to put Gene and Donna, getting them up on the site, and here they come. Yeah. Bojo. Boris Johnson. I guess they call him Bojo. He's now Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Now, what this picture here tells you everything. If you become Prime Minister, the first thing you have to do is you go and present yourself to the Queen for permission to be Prime Minister. Don't ever think it's in the monarchy. You have the parliament, people do the election, they go through all that crap, and they have, and he goes, yes, I pledge allegiance and fealty to the realm of the blah, 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 and may I please be the representative of the people in your country of whatever, yes, and you put a sword on their shoulder or something. So this is, you get permission to be Prime Minister after you get elected by the people. That's how it works. Now, what they're doing here is he's like clearing out the cabinet. It's like, well, we're changing over. Half these guys are gone. Bring in some new guys, and we're going to do Brexit. Brexit, 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 Brexit. So this is what they're promising, what they're doing by Halloween. We'll see. You know, is it going to take someone like a Trump to be able to do this? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Let's see, a bunch of hand-wringing about Mueller's testimony, the Democrats and MSNBC and, Rachel Maddow, wanted to make sure that this was used to, keep the Russiagate thing going, and Trump's bad, and we got to, arrest him and do whatever the hell we're going to do to him. And now they're talking about, all right, if you don't impeach him, we'll wait till after the next election, then we'll arrest him. I mean, it is just... I'm not sure where this is coming from. I've never seen it so all in. Acts of desperation. There's something coming. I don't know what it is, but man, they're afraid of it. The entire Democratic Party system, I mean, the Republican, half of them too, or all of them. I mean, they're all bad. I mean, I'd pick one over the other just to be naive. But Robert Mueller's dual Wednesday testimonies were, by most accounts, a total disaster for Democrats, hoping to bolster the case for impeaching President Trump. Now, then you look over here. This is how bad it is. New public school history book teaches students that President Trump is mentally, what? Let's see. The government indoctrination racket known as the public school system recently became a little more progressive with the addition of a new American history textbook published by Pearson Education, which describes President Trump as mentally ill and his supporters as racist. Entitled "By the People, A History of the United States," this compendium of leftist propaganda features a chapter entitled The Angry Election of 2016 that actually rewrites history and presents fiction as fact in an attempt to persuade students into believing that our commander-in-chief did not legitimately win the 2016 election, presidential election. Most thought that Trump was too extreme a candidate to win the nomination, the chapter claims, adding, but his extremism, his anti-establishment rhetoric, and some said his not very hidden racism connected with a significant number of primary voters. In a further attempt at shaming the president and his supporters, the author of this chapter proceeds to claim that Donald Trump's supporters are mostly older, often rural or suburban, and overwhelmingly white. On the other hand, the better people who support the author's preferred candidate, Hillary Clinton, are apparently younger, non-white, and live in densely packed urban zones. Clinton supporters feared that the election had been determined by people who were afraid of a rapidly developing ethnic diversity of the country, discomfort with their candidate's gender, and nostalgia for an earlier time in the nation's history, the chapter goes on to read. They also, quote, they also worried about the mental stability of the president-elect and the anger that he and his supporters brought to the nation. For more related news, go to blah, blah, blah. So this is an American history textbook. This is what they get. Now, on the flip side, this chapter of By the People, A History of the United States, makes no mention whatsoever about the reasons why many Americans were deterred from voting for Hillary Clinton, perhaps the most notable example being her 33,000 deleted emails, as well as the Uranium One scandal and the gross mismanagement of Haiti relief funds by the Clinton Foundation. In essence, By the People, A History of the United States is basically a thinly veiled let's bash Trump experiment and institutionalize Trump derangement syndrome. This being what passes as public education in America in 2019. It was really, really surprising to me. Tara Snyder, a student at Rosemount High School in Minnesota, where By the People, A History of the United States is now being used, is quoted as saying to Fox News, using the word appalled to describe her feelings upon first discovering how blatantly biased this textbook is, Snyder says that the purpose of education should not be to indoctrinate from a standpoint of bias, but rather to inform using truth and facts. I really believe that learning should be objective and that students can make their own decisions based on what they're able to learn in a classroom. And if the facts are skewed, then students aren't able to make well-rounded decisions on what they believe. She's quoted as saying, well, of course not. You know, they just, you know, they rewrite the history. Here it is. This is, I mean, this is not just now. This has been going on what Max Egan was talking about for centuries. There's a, he was talking about the Dark Ages, the medieval period. Weren't that dark. The Vatican wants you to think so. The Jesuits, they got to have their monks out there, you know, writing it down in a book. Must be true. They wrote it, and they wrote all this history and just kind of took 1,000 years out because it was a civilization of peace and kind of you're not in charge and the bankers, you know, be gone. And, you know, they had this worldwide, how do they call it, Tartaria or something. That's why you have a lot of similar, this column building kind of thing. And he's going, this history is just gone. You know, it's starting to be pieced together and different things. And there was some Russian astrophysicist that did a lot of described heavenly events that were in all these different guys' diaries and so on. And he go, yeah, we had a full eclipse this, we did that. And he's marrying them up and he's going, yeah, the timeline that they got, that they wrote down is not right. You know, with all the, there's like 1,000 years they just kind of scooped out and just repeated it, added, changed some names, put up, you know, a marble bust. Hey, you know, I need Michelangelo, do me some Caesar bust and we'll put them up and say we did or something. It's rewriting history and you're sitting here looking at it. This is, whether you support Trump or not, that is not the point. It's why did he win? Against the establishment of what? And you wonder why when they go to college and, yeah, we're going to get some. We're going to act, and we get credit for going to protest of what. It's amazing to me that we are as aware as we are in light of the trillions of dollars in government education mandatory indoctrination camps. It's amazing. And they want to keep getting younger. They want government funded all the way down to preschool. And that was a big thing here in Arizona. Gotta have preschool. Got preschool. The damn homeschoolers are out there like freeing people and stuff. You know, I watched a dramatized documentary kind of thing, you know, history of J.R. Tolkien, you know, Lord of the Rings author, and it was just his early days and how, you know, and his friends in college and World War One. He came back from that, and that's, you know, the war and everything played heavily in Lord of the Rings and stuff. So it was a very interesting movie, and it was, but he was an orphan, and he came up through all of this stuff, and it was all about language. He was a big language guy. And who wrote the history? This has been going on forever. And I just want, a lot of times you got to have fiction to be able to tell you what's going on. Ugh. All right. More news when we come back in just a little bit.
from the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story,
same old song and dance. All right, let's go ahead and go over some of the stories here and see what's the same. Iran claims IAEA, that's International Atomic somebody inspection thing, chief behind nuclear deal eliminated by Israeli intelligence. On Wednesday, semi-official Tasnim News Agency, semi-official, what the heck does that mean? It's like New York Times is semi-official or something, claimed Israeli intelligence eliminated Yakuya Amano, who was the director general of the IAEA and oversaw the signing of the landmark 2015 P5 plus one nuclear deal, JCPOA. This is the Iran deal that Trump canceled. Iranian sources allege the covert assassination was carried out on the powerful staunch supporter of the JCPOA in order to gain leverage to force Tehran into dealing with the Trump White House's pressure talk scheme, as Tasnim put it. So here you have this guy that was behind setting this deal up, and Iran wanted to work with him, and they trust him, and we'll do him, and nah, and he's dead. You don't get to use him anymore. And they go, yeah, you guys took him out, didn't you? Did ya? You know, just another coinky-dink. You know, stuff happens. Democrats unanimous as House passes bill forcing schools to let male athletes compete in women's sports. The Democratic-controlled House representatives voted Friday 236 to 173 in favor of the Equity Act, which would require schools to include male athletes who identify as transgender girls on female sports teams. Eight Republicans crossed party lines to vote for the bill, which had unanimous Democratic support. Wow. The bill amends the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to make sexual orientation and gender identity protected characteristics under federal anti-discrimination law. The pendulum is going to be a swinging back on this one. To have every record in school, all the women track records, lifting records, this record, that record, whatever, is by some transgender guy. that's going to be up there forever? When are they going to take it down? When they're going to change it? Are they? Among other things, that would force public schools to expand female athletic teams to include biological males who identify as transgender girls. Where is this going to, you know, we can go on and on about that. I'll let your imagination go with that one seriously. Former lobbyist Esper sworn in as Pentagon chief. Esper was sworn in at the White House by U.S. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito in a ceremony hosted by President Donald Trump and attended by a number of Republican lawmakers. He was confirmed by the U.S. Senate on a vote of 90-8 several hours earlier. That's a vote that we're not accustomed to, Mark. I have to say that, so congratulations. Well, why did everybody want to vote for him? What did he do? He's a former professional staff member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and Senate Governmental Affairs Committee. Now, let's see. Trump told Esper, yeah, okay, so he's a lobbyist, basically. Former professional staff member of Foreign Relations Committee and Senate Governmental Affairs Committee. Damn. Esper, 55, a former soldier and lobbyist for weapons maker Raytheon, received strong bipartisan support despite sharp questioning during his confirmation hearing by Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren about his ties to Raytheon and his refusal to extend an ethics commitment he signed in 17 to avoid decisions involving the company. So he's like, refusal to extend an ethics commitment. All right. So he goes, yep, no, I'm not ethically bound, and I'm not signing, and I didn't totally agree, and I'm a lobbyist for Raytheon, and I'm now in charge of Secretary of Defense. Yay. Now, one of the things is that all of these people that he's been appointing, Trump has, now a lot of them haven't been confirmed by the Senate. You know, they're just dragging it out all they can. You know, it may not be till second term that he even gets, you know, fully staffed, but he can fire them. Yeah, he might like this thing. Yeah, yeah, he's a appointed assistant super whatever the heck. Appointed, and he's unappointed. And I'll appoint another one. They want to play this game. I guess they can do it. God, it's just so. Ugh. Brazilian lawmaker threatens Glenn Greenwald with deportation over leaks. Parliamentarian and member of the ruling social liberal party, Carlos Jordi, tweeted out the thinly veiled threat on Thursday in a string of messages. You cannot confront our institutions and authorities committing crimes against national security and not imagine that you can be criminally punished and deported, the lawmaker said, adding your case is already being investigated. Well, what Greenwald has been doing is, you know, reporting on a bunch of corruption in Brazil, which is not hard to find, but the newly elected guy, and they don't like it. And Glenn, it's a Trump thing. You know, Glenn Greenwald is kind of the left going after, you know, a Trump character that's kind of popularized. We're going to kick ass and so on. They don't like it. So, you know, that's the same all over. And Trump has inspired a lot of people to be more authoritarian, I guess. Deep sea explorer who found Titanic launches mission to find Amelia Earhart's plane. The deep-sea explorer who followed an underwater debris trail to discover the wreck of the Titanic is about to tackle one of the greatest mysteries in aviation history, Amelia Earhart's disappearance. Robert Ballard, a National Geographic expedition, will search for her plane next month near a Pacific Ocean atoll known today as Nicomororo, which that's part of the Phoenix Islands. Ballard and his team will use remotely operated underwater vehicles in their search, much like the explorer did when they set out to find the Titanic in 85. Using state-of-the-art technology and decades of evidence collected in regard to her disappearance, I would say we have a real shot at rewriting history by solving one of the greatest mysteries of our time. National Geographic. Well, Amelia Earhart, I read something where they think they found her bones and where she was, that she crashed near whatever land there was and then died. So we'll see. You know, that'd be interesting. You'd get a movie out of that. It had Titanic. You know, there's been a lot of Amelia Earhart movies, but it'd be nice. And what would they do with the plane? It's going in somebody's museum or something. Yeah. Republican Congressman flays Mueller over suspected spy Joseph Missud, who Republican Congressman Jim Jordan, that's the guy I was looking for, Jim Jordan. And he had, God, it was a few minutes. How much time we got? You know, it was a few minutes of him just, you know, beating into Mueller, but you get an impression of just how flat-footed Mueller was on this thing. It was just, you know, I'm so confused. And what he was talking about is this on GPS and this one guy that had kind of worked for, God, who is it that he was talking about? He's saying he was a Mossad agent and all this other stuff. So it was just terrible for the Democrats. I mean, and I don't care, so I'm not going to, you know, I'll play it in the break. You know, this right here, we'll do in the break. Because it was only 3 minutes and 34 seconds, but it kind of, I don't know, if you wanted to be entertained, this will do it. So we'll go ahead and play that during the break, because it was interesting. And this Mueller thing is not going to go well for the I don't know, did I say the Democrats, the deep state, the whatever? I ain't even doing that RNG thing. We'll be right back. All right, so let's go ahead, and I'll set this up so we can. All right, watch full video.
The gentleman from Ohio.
Director, the FBI interviewed Joseph Mifsud on February 10th, 2017. In that interview, Mr. Mifsud lied. You point this out on page 193, volume 1. Mifsud denied. Mifsud also falsely stated. In addition, Mifsud omitted. 3 times he lied to the FBI, yet you didn't charge him with the crime.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, did you say 193?
Volume 1, 193. He lied 3 times, you pointed out in the report. Why didn't you charge him with the crime?
I can't get into internal deliberations with regard who would or would not be
charged. A lot of other people for making a false statement. Let's remember this. In 2016, the FBI did something they probably haven't done before. They spied on 2 American citizens associated with a presidential campaign, George Papadopoulos and Carter Page. With Carter Page, they went to the FISA court. They used the now-famous dossier as part of the reason they were able to get the warrant and spy on Carter Page for a better part of a year. With Mr. Papadopoulos, they didn't go to the court. They used human sources. All kinds of, from about the moment Papadopoulos joins the Trump campaign, you got all these people all around the world starting to swirl around him. Names like Halper, Downer, Mifsud, Thompson, meeting in Rome, London, all kinds of places. The FBI even sent a lady posing as somebody else, went by the name Azra Turk, even dispatched her to London to spy on Mr. Papadopoulos. In one of these meetings, Mr. Papadopoulos is talking to a foreign diplomat, and he tells the diplomat, Russians have dirt on Clinton. That diplomat then contacts the FBI, and the FBI opens an investigation based on that fact. You point this out on page 1 of the report, July 31st, 2016, they open the investigation based on that piece of information. Diplomat tells Papadopoulos, Russians have dirt, excuse me, Papadopoulos tells the diplomat, Russians have dirt on Clinton. Diplomat tells the FBI. What I'm wondering is, who told Papadopoulos? How'd he find out?
I can't get into the evidentiary file.
Yes, you can, because you wrote about it. You gave us the answer. Page 192 of the report, you tell us who told him. Joseph Mifsud. Joseph Mifsud's a guy who told Papadopoulos, the mysterious professor who lives in Rome and London, works at teaching 2 different universities. This is the guy who told Papadopoulos. He's the guy who starts it all. And when the FBI interviews him, he lies 3 times, and yet you don't charge him with a crime. You charge Rick Gates for false statements. You charge Paul Manafort for false statements. You charge Michael Cohen with false statements. You charge Michael Flynn, a 3-star general, with false statements. But the guy who puts the country through this whole saga, starts it all for 3 years we've lived this now, he lies, and you guys don't charge him. And I'm curious as to why.
Well, I can't get into it, and it's obvious, I think, that we can't get into charging decisions.
When the FBI interviewed him in February, FBI interviews him in February, when the special counsel's office interviewed Mifsud, did he lie to you guys, too?
Can't get into that.
Did you interview Mifsud?
Can't get into that.
Is Mifsud Western intelligence or Russian intelligence?
Can't get into that.
A lot of things you can't get into.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hanley.
The I played that for the audience during the break on the live stream, and it's 3.5 minutes of just, you know, slapping Mueller around. But Jim Jordan, congressman, he was a prosecutor, and he, man, when it comes down to being playing lawyer, he kicks ass. So he just, he went through and just slapped him around. It didn't go well. It didn't go well at all. This whole thing was a big, giant, we need to get rid of him, of Trump, and now it's a cover-up that we tried. And it's for the deep state of something is going to happen. All this QAnon stuff, that's one thing that Tim was talking about. There was a young man that he had to be no more than 35. He's probably even younger. But he's all QAnoned up. His big thing was Q, 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 Q. Let me tell you about Q. I said, get your butt on the show. Let's do it. So do it, do it, do it, do it. And I said, but I just want you to know straight up, I think the whole thing is a psyop. You know, I don't know, good guy, bad guy, prepping the people for what's coming to do, the whatever, you know, machinations that they think they're, whatever, but it's a psyop. And if it's not a psyop, they're going to benefit from it and use it as a psyop or something. They're just convincing you that there's something else going. There's something weird happening. There's a game being played with our mind. It's just made you look at something, doing something. But this, I think the deep state is so deep and there's so much. Is there someone or something or a group, you know, laying this out for the American people over a period of years to be able to cut the cancer out? And it's like a reverse Red Scare. I remember during the McCarthy trials in the 50s and so on. I mean, I don't remember, but, you know, it was anybody that's a communist, everybody got routed out. Well, then it was real. He was just a jerk doing it and the way he did it. But so now we have this influence in the American government, and they used our system to take it over. There was a series done, you know, I'm going to show you guys this. There was a series. It was called America Movie. And it starred Kris Kristofferson. And I think it was a mini series. And yeah, America mini series. Yeah, here you go. America, RIKA, is an American television miniseries that was broadcast in 1987 on ABC. The miniseries inspired a novelization entitled America, the Triumph of the American Spirit. America starred Kris Kristofferson, Mariel Hemingway, Sam Neill, Robert Urick, and a 17-year-old Laura Flynn Boyle in her first major role. America was about life in the United States after a bloodless takeover engineered by the Soviet Union. Not wanting to depict the actual takeover, ABC Entertainment President Brandon Stoddard set the miniseries 10 years after the event, focusing on the demoralized U.S. people a decade after the Soviet conquest. The intent, he later explained, was to explore the U.S. spirit under such conditions, not to portray the conflict of the Soviet coup. So this is what, you watch that, America, the world is different. The dream is the same. Let freedom ring. And what it was, I mean, it started off with things like, no crap. I remember one of the things. It was a high school cheerleading tryout, and you had someone came over. We're from the government indecency of the decency of decent, and you're not allowed to do that kind of kick and those kind of shorts or that kind of skirt and that kind of, you're not allowed. It's immoral and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Sound familiar? This, you watch this, it aired for 14 and a half hours, including commercials, over 7 nights from February 15th, and reportedly cost $40 million to produce. The miniseries was filmed in the Golden Horseshoe in southwestern Ontario, Canada, blah, blah, blah. And it all came down to, in the end, it was the radio, internet, whatever. This is before the internet. Keep in mind, this is 87. So it was always about getting access to a radio to be able, they go, and the general goes at the very end, whether he keys the mic, he's going to key the mic on, let freedom ring, whatever he's going to say. It was all built up to get to this radio station. A general was there, had a gun on him, or he had soldiers, and he goes, you key that mic, you're dead. And I think that was the end of the series. Boom, he keyed the mic, boom. Do you key the mic? America, K-A, Yeah, that Merkins. You know, this whole thing was about how when you have a soft coup, what happens when you have this different culture, a different mindset, the socialist, I mean, it used our system to take over our system at every level. You know, from municipal, state, county, the bureaucracy, it's a League of Cities and Towns thing. It's this town management model to where the elected city council and councilman and the mayor has absolutely nothing to do with what happens, the continuation of government, as if that was a goal. You know, what about the continuation of the people? Whatever happened to that? Oh, we got to have continuation of the government. Oh, well, hell, at least we'll have a government. You know, that's what the postman was about with, what's the guy that did Dances with Wolves? Kevin Costner. Yeah, Kevin Costner, the postman. He's like, yeah, we're starting to deliver mail again. He found some, you know, undelivered mail, a uniform on a dead postal guy, and he puts on, he's a mailman now. He goes to the community, hey, I'm here for the mail. Oh, well, hell, man, government's back. Woohoo! You know? Yeah. America. Well, that's what's going on now. And, you know, these trials and so on, they're exposing a lot of this stuff, but exposing what? How inside we've been taken over. And a lot of it was done with Jeffrey Epstein and what's going on there. Now, one story is because this is how they blackmailed and gotten. I mean, it's just because they can. And who's they? I don't know. They, them, those. Won't leave me alone. National Review helped Jeffrey Epstein rehab his image after child solicitation conviction. Now, the New York Times wrote this, but there was a National Review, online, a magazine, or whatever. We're going to do our Jeffrey Epstein a solid. We're going to, you know, get behind him and so on. So they had, you know, nice stories about him, kind of rehabbing him. He gets out and he goes on doing his stuff. What stuff? Well, we may find out. And there's a story in here. Let's see. Yeah, this one. Jeffrey Epstein found injured in New York City jail cell after possible suicide attempt. Or suicided attempt or something. Epstein was found semi-conscious with marks on his neck. Sources said investigators are trying to piece together exactly what happened. Accused pedophile and wealthy Manhattan financier Jeffrey Epstein was found injured and in a fetal position inside his cell in New York City jail, according to sources close to the investigation. Epstein, who is being held in Metropolitan Correctional Center during his trial for conspiracy and sex trafficking, was found semi-conscious with marks on his neck, two sources told News 4. Investigators are trying to piece together exactly what happened, saying details remain murky. Well, he's trying to get to a hospital. Or he get broken out, or he's gonna, you know, is he trying to off himself, or somebody pound that, waiting for the movie. You know what would be in Trump the movie? Probably. Boeing reports biggest ever loss as 737 MAX groundings drag on. Boeing is, they're gonna recover from this. They may have to go bankrupt, do kind of write off and do something. The 737 MAX, what it was is there was a software glitch in it in some way that the it would think that it was going into a stall and it would nose it down. And it kept nosing it down and you couldn't correct for it. It didn't allow you to. And so it just augured right into the ground. And it come to find out they knew this. They didn't train for it because one guy knew he was a pilot that was there or he was on the plane or something and he goes, you gotta pull this fuse. Boom. Plane comes up. You don't know that. You don't know that. And it wasn't in the manual. So how the hell they know that? I don't know how he figured it out, but he knew where the fuse was or cared and that's how they knew. Somebody survived and knew what happened. So Boeing's not gonna do well on this one.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. You know, there's some God, there's a bunch of stories. I mean, it just tells, when you go to Freedom's Phoenix, you get the dispatch. It just, you don't have to read all the stories. We do it in such a way that it's not like, missiles launched from Russia, details at 11. I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, this is what it's about. You don't have to, I get it. But, you know, some of these are interesting. You know, trade war chaos. Trump's tariffs crash American RV industry. Now, they can blame it on whatever they want to blame it on, but RVs, sales going down. And that was another thing you noticed right before each one of these big, giant, because I've been through quite a bit. Let's see, I just come out of high school and start going to college right in 80, 81. You know, Reagan gets elected. We had the oil embargo stuff. You have gas lines. Interest rates were gazillion. You know, the 30-year treasury bond was 15-point-something percent. 15. You know, the rate, the Fed rate was like 21 some crap. I mean, it was enormous. It was to save the dollar. Was because they've been spending, they had to figure out how they're going to do this thing because they got an enormous debt during the Vietnam War and military industrial complex, which Eisenhower warned was coming. And they just kept spending. And here we are. Well, when there are certain things that happen, you can notice you go into 80 is kind of the, you know, rust belting of manufacturing. Then you had the stock market crash and the savings and loan thing of the late 80s. Then you get into the wars. You had the only time that there was any kind of a surplus, you know, that we spent less than we made was during the Clinton administration because the Republicans were doing the Democrat thing, what they're doing now. You know, it's amazing to me, except instead of spending money or having all these programs, now Trump and the Democrat can't spend enough money. They're wanting to spend more money. You work with me, we'll spend a bunch of money. You want more money? Let's do this and we'll spend a bunch more money. So it's so now you're looking at certain things like the RV industry. And where I see it is the RVs for sale used out on the street and boats. Want to get a cheap boat? Want to pick up a boat for nothing? Want to get, you know, so haul it off for them? They pay you $100, you know, boats. So here in Arizona, there is a higher per capita boat ownership than anywhere else in the nation. Even Florida, California, New York. Yeah, nope. Now, even Florida. I'm from Florida. And I tell you, there are more boats here in Arizona because it's hot. It's really hot. You know, like our boats go to the lake. It's hot. You know, so I see a bunch of boats. Is it time for me to pick up a boat again? I do a little boat. I might get a little better one this time, so I'm going to work on them all the time. But, you know, I'm going, man, it'd be nice to have a little boat. I really liked having that little boat, but I didn't like having to work on it all the time. So I'm just like, yeah, we'll see. You know, I got other stuff I'd rather have. But this is some of the signs. You got a bunch of boats for sale, houses for sale. That's one thing Tim Pachote was talking about, housing. Do you have a bunch of houses for sale? No, I think they're probably renting again. They're just kind of, a lot of people, instead of selling, they're renting because they can get more money than what, because interest rates are low, but they got a payment that's pretty low. They can rent it, you know, and make a little bit of money, at least get their money back, but they can't get their principal. They can't, you know, sell it for any kind of profit without coming up with thousands and thousands of dollars to pay off the loan. So I think a lot of renting is going, there's, homes are going to get cheap. We're sitting here on the sidelines waiting. Our whole family, our friends, family, hopefully you, listener, depends where you're at. I think it's going to take a dump. And if you haven't sold, you might start thinking about it. You know, a lot of people, I'm going, sell. So what do you hear us talking about a lot on this show? You know, most of my kids now and a lot of friends, you know, like Tim, myself, so on, we rent. But in 2011, a lot of my kids, they bought. And man, can you imagine being 30 years old and being up $100,000? And you took it, you sold it, you rented, you sit and wait, and you keep doing this every, you start to see a cycle. And every 7, 10 years, you're just kind of, you know, you're, you, you, have kids and you move into your first house. Hey, we got a house. They start school. You know, they're getting into school. They're, you know, 6, 7 years ago. You sell and you take a bunch of money and you wait and then does it again. You get a bigger house and you get, you know, it used to be that, you know, it just went up in value. You found a neighborhood. You stayed there for a long time. These interest rates, machinations and playing with the economy have a big impact socially on a lot of stuff, including where people grow up and live. All right, FYI, it's coming. There's going to be like a 2011, you know, time where you get to buy cheap again. You know, will it inflate again? Will the dollar go to crap and it be depression for 15 years? It will be if they freaking keep messing with it. They just leave it alone, let it go, man. Within a year, 2 years, man, we're free again. Yeah, we'll see. But they got a bunch of guys that are doing it to us. Why are they doing it to us? Because Epstein got them on video and they get them to do whatever. The Epstein case is a rare opportunity to focus on the depraved nature of America's elite. Now, Mike Krieger wrote this on Zero Hedge. For decades, important, influential, serious people attended Epstein's dinner parties, rode his private jet, and furthered the fiction that he was some kind of genius hedge fund billionaire. I don't even know where he got his freaking money. How do we explain why they look the other way? Or flattered Epstein, even as they must have noticed he was often in the company of a young harem. Easy. They got something in exchange from him. Whether it was a free ride on that airborne Lolita Express, some other form of monetary largesse, entree into the extravagant celebrity soirees he hosted at his townhouse, or possibly and harrowingly a pound or two of female flesh. The movie. And which one would it be? Trump, the movie, and this would be a subtitle, you know, section of it, or, you know, is this going to be its own miniseries? An honest assessment of the current state of American politics and society in general leaves little room for optimism regarding the public's ability to accurately diagnose, much less tackle, our fundamental issues at a root level. A primary reason for this state of affairs boils down to the ease with which the American public is divided against itself and conquered. That's why it's always going to be some stupid issue that creates a division to the point that transgender male to female get to compete in high school female athletics and get the records. Yeah. So where's this going? You know, I common sense will rule. It always does. There's going to be a candidate, a somebody, a something. And as for now, it seems like a lot of people, it's Trump. Just, you know, you look at Trump and you go, him and Melania and his family, they're the moral ones? You know, it's just by comparison, it's amazing. We got to set our standards higher, man. But they're so, those are so bad. Rickard warns robo-trading will end in disaster. Here's what he means. There are two stages in stock investing. The first is coming up with a preferred allocation among stocks with cash, bonds, etc. This stage also includes deciding how much to put in index products or exchange-traded funds. ETFs are a kind of mini-index, and how much active management is there to use it. Now, this is what happens. An exchange-traded fund, ETF, is kind of like a mini-index. An index is kind of, you have NASDAQ, it's all a high-tech, or you have the, you know, S&P, or you know, you know, like the Dow, they got 30. They're kind of, you can index that as a group. ETF is for one specific thing. It's not like manufacturing or something like that. It's manufacturing of a specific thing, like gold, silver. They started those as ETFs. So you can buy it as a group without taking ownership of the actual commodity. You're trading an index, which is, you know, whatever good that does. The second stage involves the actual buy and sell decisions, when to get out, when to get in, when to go to the sidelines with safe haven assets such as treasury notes or gold. What investors may not realize is the extent to which both of these decisions are now left entirely to computers. I'm not talking about automated trade matching where I'm a buyer and you're a seller and a computer matches our orders and executes the trade. That kind of trading has been around since the 1990s. What he's talking about is computers actually doing trading. It's AI just sitting there. Here's, I put in, you know, $10,000 over here and like, go make me money. It's like a make me money robot. But what happens when you know, this was what the book, executive orders, or no, it was a Debt of Honor. It was a Tom Clancy book, and it was about the, I think it was Asia, it was Japan or China or something, came in and they, you know, hedged around, you know, the market, who bought what and what they gave them the ability to trade and all that kind of stuff. And what did they do? They crashed the market because they knew how, because the algorithms, they set it up in such a way, they knew the robots would send us into oblivion, and it did. Now, of course, Clancy's solution was, we're just going to start over from the day before and not let that count, but we'll see how that goes. It's like forking Ethereum Classic or something. See you tomorrow.